Of course, you didn't expect people to show up at your house, and you weren't going to ride out on horseback and go arrest the sheriff, right? So I think it's kind of funny that they kind of came after you really hard. In fact, how long did it take before they came to you?
Well, I made my broadcast on a Saturday morning, and I was in jail Monday night.
Wow.
So it didn't take too long. They arrested me at work with a SWAT team. They even brought a dog. I don't know what that was for, but they brought a dog, and they took me down, I guess you could say, and ended up in jail. I didn't expect to be arrested for threatening or anything to do with that type of thing. I thought for sure they'd arrest me for Holocaust denial, they call it in Canada, the Holocaust denial law, which I admitted to breaking, and they did get a lot of mileage out of my speech when it came to what I had to think about the Holocaust during the trial, even though I wasn't charged with Holocaust denial. So that was an odd thing. They like getting their mileage out of that story. We're not allowed to dispute it here in Canada. Unfortunately, it's just what it is, and I'm not going to, break the law overtly willfully. Anyway, I'm going to try to watch my speech a bit, which is very sad that I have to do this. For a grown man to not be able to discuss World War II history, or a grown lady, or even a child for that matter. I mean, it's not right in our Western culture, but that's what we got going on here right now. So they got a lot of mileage out of that that story, and they vilified me in front of the jury using, my version of things, we'll call it.
Well,
we're not allowed to discuss.
That's not really the only thing, though. I mean, I think you did maybe go into that area of politics and history, but you also were issuing people. You were kind of giving a warning to people about the health situation that was happening. You were headed into an unprecedented time in Canada where they were issuing lockdowns and vaccine mandates for I think something that you clearly didn't trust, and I think you weren't alone in that. I know that millions of people, if not hundreds of millions of people here, also did not trust the vaccine and the medical stuff, and so you're essentially looking at a total lockdown, full on tyranny, not just by a particular group of people, but also essentially by your federal government, and this is the ultimate in tyranny, right? Like when the government takes away freedoms, especially freedoms of movement, association, speech, that sort of stuff. Those what we would call civil rights here. It was far more than just the few things that they actually tried to throw at you, right? Like you were interested in telling people the truth about the things that you knew, and was there something about the truth of everything as you saw it that kind of compelled you to take this really bold stand, and when so many other people were obviously staying silent?
Well, the way I figure is, what are they going to do? Kill us twice? So even if they kill me for what I said, I figured they're going to round us all up and do us all in anyhow. So I didn't really feel all that brave doing what I did. I just figured it was just something that needed to be done to try and stop what I thought was inevitable, right? So, I tried to inform the public as well as I could with what little means I had to do it with. I took part in a bit of theatrics to try and get more people to see my channel in my broadcast the following week, and that's why I linked in the safari to take place after my broadcast. And I did, like I said, I didn't expect anyone to show up, and I did expect a lot of people to tune in though to see what this guy was talking about, and I was hoping to get the attention of a lot of people.
Right.
Hopefully some people that actually believe in the COVID. I was hoping to convince people that, things weren't what they say they were. So it's one of those things where the government used my words as an excuse, I feel, to overdo things a bit and to really try to vilify me.
Yes.
And to remove me from the political scene as well. Because the things that I talk about will, in fact, help the Canadian people live a little bit better. If we get rid of the banking system the way it is and implement an interest-free banking system and eliminate taxation and have the labor of the civil service back the currency that's printed to, pay them,
yes.
Which is worth more than gold, by the way, for all those gold standard aficionados walking around with their puffy chests, I'm sure, what I'm saying, those kind of folks, right?
I do.
Where they think they know something, and like we think we know something as well, but I'm confident that we are correct in this, because there is no commodity in this world worth more than human labor, and the German economic miracle was a real thing.
Yes.
I was just trying to bring a little taste of that to Canada to give my people a little bit of relief financially, then this economic terrorism, and even the Bolsheviks under Lenin. They talk about economic terrorism as one of the means to subjugate a people. And I read a book, a famous book by some Italian guy written back in the 1400s or 1500s. And that gentleman talks about how to become a prince and how to take control of things. And one of the methods they use is to despoil the kingdom that they want to take over. And that just means to destroy it financially and make people poor where they don't have any kind of say in things. After all, money is power, and when the people have money, the people have power. So the best way to take away power from people is to take away their money. And that's been a formula that's been in place for a long time now to do these things. And also, I see that the communists are really ratcheting things up, and they really did during the COVID. And I recognize these things from history.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, it's here now. I was actually surprised that the commies rolled this stuff out so boldly. I was very surprised at that. I thought the things that we used to believe in and talk about regarding what can happen in the future weren't going to happen for a long time into the future, a long time after I was dead. But I was surprised to see that these things were rolled out in my own time. So, being a good Canadian, or trying to be one, I thought and a politician as well, I didn't want to take the coward's way out and take money from these people and help kill my people, so I did the opposite. I spoke out against them at great, danger to myself, and I paid the price for it. And I may pay a higher price in the future because I'm going to continue trying to help the Canadian people get out of this financial slavery. And the track record is pretty poor for the people in the past who've attempted to do these things and have maybe accomplished them for a short period of time.
Right.
But it doesn't dissuade me because it needs doing, and no one else is doing it. And I'm the only person that's going to do it, it seems, the way that I want to do it. So I can't quit, because if I quit, basically the nation's done. It's not that I'm famous, like so famous right now that we're on the cusp of getting ourselves out of this financial mess that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
But if I quit, basically I don't think we'll ever get out of it. So I see myself right now as being like the last political hope in Canada to make a change for the better. I could be wrong, though, if someone fills my shoes afterwards, if I leave the scene for whatever reason. But right now, I'm the only guy I see doing it, and I have to continue. If I don't, then we're done. And it is a life and death thing here.
Well, I think you've really, my guests have a way of kind of leading me to the next question I was going to ask. I think you kind of have, but you have been essentially kind of renewed in your purpose and your mission. And you find yourself in a position where you have to kind of turn up the heat instead of backing off, right? And that I think even speaks more to your character, aside from just being, and I think it was an act of bravery. A lot of people are very modest and they don't want to take any credit, but it did take some bravery to try to warn people and to try to warn people knowing that there could be consequences, but to even go through the punishment and to come out the other end, a stronger man, and to stay dedicated to your cause, I think that even speaks more to you. You know, not just resilience, but strength. Do you see yourself at all as a strong, you know, kind of warrior, or are you just, do you feel kind of like the unfortunate guy that's in the position that you're in? I mean, I wouldn't want to say like it was a pessimistic thing, but you don't really come off as a victim to me of the things that you've been through, and you've been through quite a bit. What was it like losing your freedom for 2 years? I mean, that had to have been, especially over speech, you know, something that's that we're supposed to have the liberty of expressing.
I am a reluctant warrior, we'll call it. I know what I'm doing, and I know we're at a war, and I realize I'm a warrior, but I'd prefer not to be this kind of person if I didn't have to be this. You know, I don't think too many soldiers want to go to war. I mean, it's good for them to have a good attitude and want to go after the enemy, kind of like, you know, a husky that's ready to pull and do his work. But it's one of those things where you just wish there was no war and people weren't trying to harm our people.
Right.
Right, so because this has happened, I think most warriors that go out, they suck it up and they do what needs doing. I don't think they really want to be in the trenches in the mud, fooling around with that, you know, getting shot at and whatever else happens during a war, right? But they do it because they feel they have to do it, and that's what I feel like I'm doing.
So it's a duty.
And the second part of your question was what?
I was just going to say, so it's a duty. I get that.
Yeah, I think you're doing it now, you know? And everybody on this channel is doing it, or on this platform. And the people listening generally are doing it as well, I would think. You know, all these people. And it's up to us to increase our numbers and get those numbers up there and create a political force that's unstoppable. And we can have our lives the way that we're supposed to have our lives. And I'm not going to say have our lives back.
Right.
We never really had good lives to begin with. We've never seen good economic times. We've seen better times, but not good times. So we can have a system in place economically where there's more stability and there's less of these ups and downs. And we can make the economy much more predictable by taking the control of the economy into our hands and taking it away from people who benefit in many ways, not only financially, from these market fluctuations that they cause themselves. You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's probably a good way to put it, I would think.
Yes.
Right? Because they benefit in a lot of ways. They benefit financially. They make themselves richer, makes them more powerful. Also, they make the other people poorer and weaker. And so you see how this works. They flip a few levers and call a recession or a depression. And next thing you know, the bankers are turning thin air into property when they foreclose on houses and things like this. Because there's always more debt than money in the system because the bankers only print principal for loans. They don't print the interest. So every time they create a loan, basically they've manufactured a sponge that goes into our economy. And when that loan is paid back, if it ever is, it comes out of our economy not only with the interest, with the principal, but also the sponge is full of interest. And if they stop printing money, our economy is done, because even with the way the system is, this interest-charging system, if they stop printing money, even with the interest, all of a sudden our economy will dry up before all the sponges are pulled out of our economy. And that's just the way it goes, right? So that's why it's a good idea to print money interest-free, so that the money that goes into your economy is not a sponge, and only the principal comes out of your economy when it's paid back to the bank. And if your nation runs the banks, that money gets used again because it gets rolled back into your economy when your government pays for goods, using that money that you you had printed for you so you could buy a house, and you pay back only that money.
That's right.
Your hard labor.
In our country, it was one of the requirements of the implementation of a federal government in America. Was that the government solely would print the money, and that the U.S. mints were set up to print currency, and that was the rule in the Constitution here. Did you have a similar law in Canada about the issuance of currency originally?
It's hard to find that law. I believe this is the case, that only the Bank of Canada is allowed to actually commission the printing of actual physical dollars. But for some reason here, the charter banks are allowed to print electronic money. And most things are created or bought using electronic money, right? Almost everything's transferred. Even if it was electronic, it would be a check and not actual cash currency.
That's
you
right.
know, so yeah, that system's in place right now, and it's been bastardized because only the Bank of Canada, if it wasn't owned by the Rothschilds, from what I hear, it's the only one that should be able to issue currency at all, I would think. These charter banks shouldn't even exist. We should only have one bank in Canada, and that's the National Bank. It's a nationalist bank that would print money backed by labor for the civil service to use, or the Treasury could print that money. And for private lending, the bank could sell people money at cost instead of selling people money for more than it's worth because of interest.
You've really thought this through. I got a message, I think, from you via a mutual friend of ours, and it was about a 14-minute dialogue where you did lay out a system of moving Canada back to a labor-backed currency and also getting rid of the usury, specifically the usury from banks that were issuing fiat currency, right? And I think, you're talking about using specie, you're talking about using real money. That's something that I've heard quite a few people bring up in the past. Did you devise this plan while you were inside? Did it take you 2 years to kind of put this all together and think about this? You didn't really waste your time in there, did you?
No, I didn't waste my time. Like I said to someone before, just because you're captured during a war doesn't mean the war is over. So thanks to some of your colleagues and thanks to yourself, actually, for what I've heard. You guys helped me to fight the war while I was in there by telling people about me, and I appreciate that. And the monetary system that I was just talking about, I'm always learning more. I know what I know now, and it'll get us by, but I always learn more about the nuances of how to argue this economy into existence in the face of ignorance. You know, I always try to defeat the lies that they've put in front of us, like, interest fights inflation, we'll say. That's what they try to tell us, right? But we know it's a lie.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's just ridiculous stuff that they tell us. Or you printed too much money and, now it's not worth anything. It's actually totally false, right?
Yes.
It's when you print interest burden money that you get too much debt, and that's what adds to the inflation. But I thought about these things at one time, and I was actually foolish enough, because I was ignorant, not to know that I did not invent this system. I didn't know about the German system, so, yeah, I did it independently of any knowledge about the Germans. But right around the time, I was starting to conclude on what to do about convertibility of a nation's money overseas after, the Rothschilds basically banned your currency like they did to Germany. That's what I considered the barter angle on things, how to trade goods for goods, a very simple plan that the Germans used. I didn't know that they did all these things. I actually thought that I had invented an economic system, which I never did. I did think about it independently from anyone else telling me about this, about the end game, but it wasn't just me that ever thought of this in the whole world, so I'm glad it didn't come out and try to, make it sound like I discovered this. I didn't do that. I did think of it all on my own, which is amazing to me. I mean, a lot of the things I've learned in life were from other people, and this is one of the few things I've ever actually taught myself, so it's something to be happy about, I'll say, because it's so important to humanity. And I think that people are going to like not having to pay taxes anymore in the future and not having to file income tax returns. That'll be a huge increase in the amount of freedom that Canadians will have. Also, I'd like to implement a First and Second Amendment type agreement with the Canadian people. And I can only expect that agreement to last as long as I'm in power, because it's not right to make decisions for generations that come after us. And in Canada, this constitution that we have is actually holding us back quite a bit. And it seems like the only time that they implement the actual words or try to enforce these words is when it suits the government, when something's done to the Canadian people that's not in our best interest. They put words on paper to make it all okay, and then they come and do harm to us. And that Constitution isn't worth anything. So that's a little lesson maybe for the American people as well. Your Constitution ultimately is only as good as the elected representatives that you elect and the civil service that does what they're told by those elected representatives. If, like, during COVID they'll betray you and enforce measures, then basically your Constitution isn't worth much. So keep an eye on that, I recommend, for the American people and the Canadians as well.
That's a real bombshell. I mean, and you're, I think that you're right. And it's kind of shocking to really think about or to even hear it said. But people that have betrayed you before will have no reservations about doing that again. And they don't have a single second thought about it. There's not a moral impulse within them, it seems. Would you kind of agree on that, or can you? I suppose I have to be very careful about saying things about people.
Yeah, it's a fantastic point you made, Flood. Basically, can these people ever betray you again? Well, I think they're more or less motivated to betray you again once they're found out.
Yes.
To prevent prosecution from happening to them. And I wrote back to the local newspaper today that's saying that I intend to, if I become a member of Parliament, I'll pursue prosecution against the people that locked us down and forced vaccines on us, the whole nine yards, including the media. Right? So I'll definitely pursue these things and let the Canadian people know, for the ones that don't know, that yes, they've been poisoned. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I'm quite willing to be the sheriff on this one and make our country safe again from the likes of these folks who can't be trusted with power. So this is an important thing for Canadians to know, and I'm certainly willing to tell them what is important in their best interest, and I'm going to do that.
I think that's incredible, and I suppose I should clarify a little bit. You're not really talking about running for a local office or, you know, something around the Brantford area, right? I think you're going for the big enchilada. Is that correct? Are you running for prime minister, or is that your plan?
Not just prime minister just yet. I don't have a party. You need a party here unless the other parties decide to make you prime minister, which I doubt they will with me, because I know they don't serve the people that I serve.
I see.
And I serve the Canadian people. All right, but I will start a party. They called this election a little too early. And I've got support now since I've been in jail for speaking my mind and trying to protect the Canadian people. And I'm going to use that support. I've been reluctant in the past to accept help. But this is the time to do it. Now that there's a good amount of help available for me to use, I'm definitely going to pick up that help and use it. Kind of like if someone drops a weapon during a war and you see it on the ground, well, that's your weapon now, and you're going to use it to help your people. And this popularity that I'm enjoying because of what I've done for the Canadian people, trying to save them, I'm going to use that to help. So all this goodwill that's being projected towards me, I'm just going to roll it back into more success and make that snowball even bigger. And I intend to... Well, we'll see what the future brings. My intentions are to start an irresistible political force in Canada. And I think we can make that happen. I think I have the right character to do this. I'm going to involve a lot of people from all different walks of life to do this as well. It's going to be really a beautiful thing, I think. It's going to be almost like the Third Reich, the way that they had the most diverse force going, but they're all similar in the right ways. Diversity is not good if it's not like-mindedness, you know what I mean? Like, you don't want to have diverse opinions on certain things. And diversity is a huge weakness in some ways. You have to be like-minded in a lot of ways to make your dreams come true. And a lot of people have to think at the same time in the same way, almost like a hive mind. Other than that, I like free speech. I like independent thinking. I think that the more people we have thinking in different ways, the better our country is. But there are a few basic things that people should think the same way on, and interest-free banking is one of them. Also, free speech is another one. And allowing firearms ownership for people that are competent is another one as well.
Yes.
And I think that those things are very, very important to secure the future of our people. and I'm definitely pushing for those things.
But that's, I think that's definitely a solid platform. I don't know a person alive that would disagree with you, and I love your analogy as well. You know, you talked a little bit about diversity, and I also kind of realize we need a diversity of tactics, but we need to have a unity of purpose. We need to all have the same purpose, and that means that we all need to share the same common interests, and that's a very difficult thing to do with, you know, with too much, I would call it cultural diversity. Do you find the same problem? It's kind of a softball question, but there's been a lot of diversity. We'll just call it, there's been a lot of diversity delivered since you went to jail 2 years ago, I would assume. That's directly in opposition to a common interest, isn't it? Can you have a common interest with people that aren't from where you're from and they're not like you?
You certainly can. It's amazing. We're all human beings, mm-hmm. and I'm going to try and unite the nation under money. I think that's a unifying force, and economic prosperity should be something that people are willing to work towards. It was a pretty popular topic in jail. A lot of those guys are in jail because of money, either to buy drugs with or whatever else they had a use for money. And basically, I told these fellas that, you know, you can live a lot better if the economy's better. You won't have to break the law. And just by doing regular things, going to regular workplaces, you'd end up with more to show for your efforts than you have right now while you're in jail. And I think the fellas understood that I wasn't fooling around, and I was willing to do the most dangerous and beneficial thing in politics, which is bringing an interest-free banking system. And they liked that, and they got behind me because of what I was saying, and they know I mean it. And I'm still going to pursue these things. So economics would be a great thing to unite the people around. I think it's a pretty universal thing, this love of money. I like money. You know, I don't do things that are detrimental to the Canadian people to earn it. But I like my money. Who doesn't like money? Everybody likes a little reward for the work that they've put out. You know, that's what it is. We work for a reason. It's for an outcome, and sometimes that outcome is money. Other times it's other things, like talking to you on the phone right now. It isn't for money. It's for freedom.
Right, know? Right.
But most people love that money. You know what I mean? I think it should be an easy sell to sell the Canadians on financial prosperity.
You know, I think this is a very interesting take, because you are taking something that's universal, like the need for money, the need for a currency for people to meet their own needs is universal. And we've been kept in a bit of a competition of sorts, right? Like we see other people, and I think we've been trained to see other people as competition for a limited amount of resources. But what you're proposing is not really limited. It's actually an unlimited amount of resources tied to the labor of the people, where people can actually really build value in their lives. And could this change the social dynamic where people no longer see each other as economic competition? I mean, it seems kind of utopian, but is that ultimately kind of what you're getting at? Is that if we don't feel like we have to fight for resources, then we can get along better?
Oh, I would think so. That's a great angle, and I myself have never really considered that part of the equation. It's a good thing that you brought up. It's well worth discussing this. You know, like when you have everything that you need, you're not likely to steal from your neighbor or to plan an invasion on his territory. You know, it's fantastic. I think that your point is very, very important, and it's part of unifying the people. It reduces conflict. So I think that having a really good economy will lower the crime rate a great deal, and also lower people's aspirations to maybe take over Canada for their own little group so that they can have a better life if the life is already good. So right. It reduce the motivation for people to step outside of our little tribe, we'll call it, and try and create their own tribe. It'll just be one Canadian tribe in the future, I'm hoping.
This is a pretty big and bold idea, because there are a lot of people, I would say probably some degree of them were pretty powerful people, that would have a specific interest in not having that sort of community, not having that sort of country, not having a place where people didn't hate each other, or having a place where people willing to cooperate, or even just live, you know, the ways that they want to, with means that they didn't have to borrow from a bank. There's a lot of people that are heavily invested in sort of this top-down hierarchy, and those people are all going to be coming after you when you propose this this idea. I hope you got a lot of security in the near future, because we've seen this here, where you get occasionally a man will come along, he will gain some degree of power, and he will try to do the right thing. I would just say it's the right thing, without getting into specific policy or things like politics like that, but they will try to do something that upsets the current power structure, essentially. And those guys don't seem to last very long, unfortunately, or they seem to have very tragic family lives. And I think that's one of the reasons why there's only, I think, one politician in our Congress that actually doesn't take money from a certain group of people. But the other 800 of them all do. No matter what side of the house they're on, no matter which wing of the bird. Are the people to a point yet where they can resist that kind of corruption? Are they, you know, are they strong enough to have your back and carry you as far as you can go? Yeah, you know what I mean? Are they ready for that? Or, I mean, I know that people are kind of tired of what there is, but are they ready to accept some of these ideas in order to get rid of what they've got now? I guess that's kind of the question. Are the people with you on this? Do you think they will be fully on board? Have you gotten much indication of that?
I had a bit of a study group while I was in jail. I had a lot of guards and inmates to talk to. And I think, I don't know what the success rate was for me, but it was very, very high. When it came to acceptance of my policies, we'll call them.
Right.
When I told these people what my ideas were, and I explained what was presently in existence today as far as an economic system and the flaws in it, like the certainty of failure being engineered into it, like the guarantee of foreclosures, because there's always more debt than money. It didn't take long for these folks to see what I was proposing was an honest game. You know, it's like going to an honest casino.
Right.
And that's what I was suggesting to people, that we run our economy honestly. And they saw the good in that, especially when I pointed out a few of the benefits. And like you mentioned, there's an unlimited resource available for humanity once they back their currency with human labor. And they're not limited by the amount of gold that they have as to what they can achieve as a nation. And this example that we set in the future will destroy the New World Order, I believe. They might morph into something else and come back at us from a different angle. But I would think. I don't think they're going to give up that easily. But their big plans right now for that one world currency would be quashed, I think, at that point. If Canada or America adopted this economic system and basically recreated the German economic miracle and prospered in front of the whole world with this new technology we have called the Internet, and showed off what we had, not to boast, but to teach people that they could have a better life if they take the devils out of their details, you know?
And I like that.
It's a simple thing. It's child's play. It's like an ice cream or a lemonade stand, basically, is what this amounts to. It's that simple. And it's that pure and it's that good. You know, this new banking system, it would just do wonders for everybody.
Here in America, we've had a situation where I think they've kind of used immigration as a weapon. I think they've used immigration, illegal immigration, which I don't really see too big of a difference between legal and illegal. But essentially, they have brought in tons of people with, I would say, divergent interests from the people that were here already, and they clearly did it to dilute any shadow of political power, voting power, to dilute the power of the people that were already here and already angry about the way things were. And then the people that they brought in, they gave them everything and made life so easy and so beneficial for them to just be here that those people have, you know, sent for their families, and now their families are here, and these people are enjoying, I would say, not really even the benefits of the labor of the people that were already here, but they're doing it at the expense of future generations of the people that are here, while their future generations will also be subsidized and remunerated for no more than just being here. That's created a massive social conflict between diverse groups of people, where the diversity is certainly not a strength, but it's a source of infighting and fighting that allows the people at the top to just get away with abject theft, and in some cases even worse than that. Can people overcome their cultural differences and get on the same page? I mean, you've already kind of mentioned that money would be a great attractant toward that, but won't there always be some people that are just hardline against any sort of such diversity, or having these divergent interests in the same place, vying for the attention of the same group of governing people?
Well, yeah, these people, for the most part, weren't brought here for our own good.
Right.
They were brought here to be an intentional detriment to our people, like the people that were here ahead of time. So I see them creating different enclaves. Multiculturalism actually just creates more hatred, more dislike, because you're bringing people in that have problems, and you're bringing them into huge numbers, and you're not putting them in the same areas to live, like a salt and pepper shaker, or salt and pepper in the same shaker, pardon me. What you're doing is you're bringing these people in, you're keeping them in their own enclaves, and then you're growing these enclaves. And what you're going to end up doing, or what's being done, is they're trying to recreate all the strife that was going on in the areas that people came from. It'd be the same thing if they recreated Europe and Canada, instead of like having us all live together, they had like every different nationality living in a different place. It wouldn't be long before we had another brother war in Canada, I would think, that kind of thing, right? So this multiculturalism is not here for our good. Multiracialism, it's what it is. I mean, so we can't do too much right now to reverse that the way things are going. What we have to do is elect a new government, and then, like, if you elect me, I'll deport a lot of people. But honestly, even before we take care of the race issue, I'm talking culture, okay? Culture is the most important thing.
Right.
And, like, during COVID, if I went into a store, like some place to buy some goods, and some white lady, blonde hair, whatever, right, starts yelling at me to wear a mask. I mean, I don't look at her like she's my nationalist sister, okay? But when I go to the supermarket and I see a fella who's got dark skin, he's wearing no mask, and it's like just him and me and maybe one other person in the whole supermarket, yeah, I'm going to approach that gentleman. I'm going to shake his hand and say, thanks, brother. Thanks to meet you. I'm glad you're not wearing a mask kind of thing. This is when it comes to life and death. Everything else is petty. That isn't like-mindedness. That's the most important thing, Now, I know certain character traits follow certain races around. This is a truth. I don't disagree with that. I see it. Like, I see Chicago and whatever else, right? I get that.
Right.
But not every person from that race agrees with what's going on there either. So I'd like to take the like-minded people and nurture a sense of goodwill with these folks, and hopefully when they have offspring in the future, their like-mindedness carries on through the next generation like good genes would, what I mean? And I'm hoping that's the case. And if we could erase any kind of unnecessary animosity from our culture, we won't have these kind of animosities coming up and creating problems in the future. I wouldn't legislate speech, but I promote good manners, and that's how I think we should go into the future with this new face of humanity that we seem to have become here. But yes, I am definitely in favor of deporting millions of people every year if we can, just neutralize any kind of cultural harm that's been planned for us, like engineered, like that stuff that you were talking about. you know, those people that just never be part of our culture. We don't want that here.
Right.
And also, we're your northern border, okay? We're your northern neighbor. We guard your northern border, so to speak. And you guys don't need any extra help having people slide in there to, you know, invade you. And as a prime minister, I'd definitely be America's good buddy there, your good cousin. I'd be more like a blood relative looking out for your best interests, believe me. And nobody's going to invade you if I'm the prime minister from here. The only thing we got for you is backup in case someone does something to you at your front door.
That's incredibly based. What would you do when Donald Trump knocked on your door and said he wanted to make you the 51st state or some other ridiculous and offensive idea like that? Like you should just be absorbed into our degenerate culture.
Well, he'd probably have diplomatic immunity, so I wouldn't punch him in the nose. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't want to start an international incident with my American cousins. He'd probably hate him anyway. Good for them. Yeah, I don't think I'm going for that 51st state thing. I think we're better off being an independent body. That's your great friend in the north. Right now, things are kind of sketchy up here. I'd be really wary, pardon me, if I was an American right now. Yeah, your back door is not being guarded at all right now, really. Just the regular Canadian people might oppose something, but as you know, if we're not organized, we don't have power here. And basically, we can cry foul all we want while foreigners are invading America from here, and it's not going to do a bit of good. So that's why I'm going to try and kick this thing into high gear in the next little while and try and form a party up here, and we'll see what we can do to capture the imagination of the Canadian people and see if they want to make a real change and not just some kind of superficial nonsense. Like Pierre Poilievre, the conservative leader here, was campaigning on axe the tax. You know, there's so much wrong with our country right now that axing the tax, sure, would prevent things from getting a little worse, but he's not touching the important issues like making the banks all interest-free, you know, and nationalizing the banks.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, so that the entrepreneurs in Canada can actually borrow money and not have to pay back an impossible debt to these bankers and run their businesses properly.
I have a couple of really good questions from the audience, and man, time just flies by really fast here. And I want to say thanks again for spending some time with us tonight. But Burn Before Reading wants, he says, thank you for the sacrifices that you made for the truth, and that your courage is an inspiration. And I can certainly agree with him on that. I think a lot of people feel that way. I felt absolutely inspired, and it was actually a guy named Kill Your TV who's made a song. I know you've heard the song because I think I sent it to Dave's program when you were on there, and it was Kill Your TV probably solely responsible for making people aware of you originally, and he's become a bit of a powerhouse musician, but I got to give him credit where it's due. He made a really great song that really made us pay attention really early on. I think within the first couple of months that you were arrested, everybody around this circle knew who you were, and we followed you, and including we followed the fact that you were not seen or heard from for quite some time after you disappeared. And a lot of people had kind of begun to speculate on what, you know, what had your fate been. And and it was actually totally by a fluke that I was doing a radio program called Speak Free Radio, and it was live in the UK, and it was live here in the USA, and we had to kind of split that program up because the UK had adopted very, very harsh laws toward hate speech, and my show probably would have gotten anybody thrown in jail over there, because I got a pretty spicy show, and you were a little bit of a neon ranger, I guess where I'm headed here is I've met some really good people, not just through what you've been through, but there's kind of assembled this band of folks that I got to meet Paul from. I got to meet Monica Schaefer and Alfred Schaefer, I think kind of indirectly. We set up a Telegram group, and probably one of the most important people, I didn't know, but I had known Dave Gahari at that point for several months, because I actually met him through some work he did trying to help out another fellow down here in the USA when he went to jail. But it's kind of funny. You came up just in conversation between Dave and I one day, and I was telling him the story of this guy named Leslie Borey, and he said, "What, you mean Les? Like, I talk to him every day." And I thought, well, that's, you know, you're not listening to me, you know. It's this guy named Leslie Borey. He's from Canada. He's like, yeah, no, I talk to the guy every day. He calls me on my phone every day. And I was just absolutely shocked and floored that that Dave Gahary knew you. He didn't just know who you were, but he was literally, he was helping you or at least talking to you for that a lot of that time. Is that correct? Can you tell us kind of any background on that? I don't think you have to spill any beans on anything, but how did you meet Dave, and how did Dave get involved in your plight?
Dave sent me a letter. He sent a letter to jail, and I got his letter, and I read his letter, and I tried to call him, and it was funny. I couldn't get through to him at first. I couldn't figure out what to do from jail, how to dial these numbers, and finally I got through, and I talked to Dave. And oh, by the way, I'd also like to thank Killer TV and all you guys for letting people know what was going on. I have to be a little bit reserved in my praise because of the conditions I'm under right
Understood.
Now.
Understood. Makes
but
sense.
I cannot possibly tell you how much it means to have people know about you when you're stuck in a hole somewhere the way I was. And thank you very much, all of you, for that, by the way. And Dave was a huge influence on me. He was great to talk to. He gave me hope, and it was fun to talk to Dave, you know, and to get my word out to the world a bit. My message of goodness and honesty for the world. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to show people that there's an honest politician who's willing to do some good and to make people's lives better, unlike the guys that we have in now. So Dave was huge in that, and I feel indebted to Dave and also to Paul Fromm as well, who he had something like 10 protests to free me out of jail. And I even met the one person I believe you know just the other day who was driving home, saw the protest, and stopped to take part and hold one of the banners to free me. I met the gentleman, and he knows you, Flood, and it's real nice how these things work, how we can meet people in real life that actually helped us and are working towards the same goal of freedom and prosperity in all our countries.
We're definitely not the only ones, right? We're not alone, and I think that's a really important thing. Like you mentioned, when you're inside the slammer, and I imagine life was probably really hell in there. It really is important to just have any kind of contact with somebody outside, and just to know that there are people out there that care about you. You know, I once did 7 days in jail, and I thought that I was going to die. You know, I was such a puss about it. But you doing 2 years is unimaginable. I can't really imagine that you can't get the time back, and how that can affect your relationships. And obviously, your whole life's probably destroyed once you get out, unless you're lucky enough to have people that can hold it together for you. But it's those kind of people that will not only take on a risk, but they will take on the duty, right? We talked about duty before. There is a duty to each other, to look after each other, to have each other's back, and to treat each other honorably and respectfully. And we don't really have to lie about stuff. We don't have to manipulate people. Good people do good things, right? And I think it's important for people to know that there are people out there that do those sorts of things. And it's kind of a meme at this point, but there are people out there that just simply don't believe that anybody's that good, and that everybody must be up to something, and everybody must have an angle, and everybody must be, trying to gain. But that's not really the case. Is there really are people out there that are for the cause of our people, and even across borders, they will help each other any way that they can. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. There's some really good people out there. I'm looking forward to meeting a few hundred good people who want to run for office and represent the Canadian people. I'd like to see this happen. I've got people that want to help now. While I was in jail, I had offers of people that wanted from people who wanted to run for office with me. I made a bit of an impression there, and the fellows made an impression on me as well. So it was really nice you know, I had a bit of an incident in there early, about 6 months into where I almost got killed. You can see my nose isn't as straight as it used to be. Not that you've seen it much before, but she's on a bit of an angle now after what happened. And, you know, I almost didn't live through that. I mean, it wasn't like I spent much time in the hospital, but it was pretty close to, you know, when someone hits your head like that against some metal, you know, it didn't take much to kill you. So that was a pretty close deal. You know, the government turned my war of words into, you know, something a little bit more violent than that when they came and put me in a violent place and pointed guns at me and used violence. And that's what I tell people as well. I says, they're bringing violence into our war of words now, you know, this terrorism, this police terrorism, and these groups, you know, they show up and they try to have you harmed. They try to mm-hmm. advocate for the harm of the person who's telling the truth or the people that disagree with them, I'll say even, you know. And this shouldn't be the case in Canada, and it shouldn't be the case in our Western world either. We shouldn't have these terrorists who are advocating for life sentences for speech violations like they were in Canada. It's amazing. And these countermeasures are kind of showing us that, like I mentioned earlier, the people that are guilty of murdering us with vaccines and doing things to lock us down and to take away our freedom and to terrorize us into doing things that we don't want to do, you can tell by the legislation that's rolling out now that people are getting a little bit nervous at the truth coming out, and they're trying to double down on things and put us in jail for a lot longer for speaking our minds. In a way, that's a good sign that they're blinking, and we just have to keep doing what we're doing. Of course, find legal ways to speak our minds, and that's what I intend to do in the future. And like I said, my focus is going to be on money, and anything else is synonymous with my convictions, so I don't have to say much anymore.
No, that's
so
good.
You know what I'm saying? So basically, they've given me a badge of some sort, and you know, and people can see what that is and what it represents. And also, I can just speak freely about money now and see, you know, as long as I can breathe. And that might not be too long if the bankers get their usual way, but it's what it is. Someone's got to stand up for their people, and that's what I'm doing.
You know, you went through something that was very terrible, and unfortunately, it was very under the radar. And I've had another gentleman on here, and I realize that you may not be able to speak about this particular group, but somebody in chat asked, and I realize that this particular group has been kind of identified by the federal Canadian government as like a public enemy or even a terrorist organization potentially. So I don't expect you to say that you're allied or that you like them or hate them. But have you heard of the trucker thing in Coutts? And there was a group called Diagolon that was kind of being demonized. And I thought I had actually the leader, Jeremy McKenzie, and shout out to Diagolon. It's not illegal for me to say hail Diagolon, but I realize that you may not be able to, and you may not be able to talk to me anymore after that. Without any risk to you, he was actually the opposite case. Like, they went after him, but they dragged him through the media. He was on the national television. He was like Trudeau and Polyev and these other people are saying this guy's name and the name of his group, and he's just they're a little, you know, a small little association of like online guys that stream, you know what I mean? You could almost just call them like a small group of trolls, but they did actually inspire quite a bit of I think civic nationalism or even patriotism up there, but. You're in your situation, you were kind of black bagged under the radar, and nobody spoke of it, nobody talked about it. It was very hush. And in his case, he was absolutely like a national he was infamous, you know, nationally, and that they tried to ruin his life that way by, you know, the media smearing him and essentially tried to turn this small group of just like fairly benign guys into this the next Al Qaeda, you know, and these guys, some of these guys are veterans that went over and fought Al Qaeda and fought some of these terrorists, but then they were equated to the same. Have you heard of them? Have you heard of that group at all? And have you any ideas or thoughts on why the way that the government handled both of you was complete different, total polar opposites of each other?
Well, I don't want bad things about people, but you know what controlled opposition is, right?
Yes, yes, I do. Yes.
Okay.
That's well, that's enough. Yeah. Yeah, I get you. I get you. I just thought it was bad that. Go ahead and say it. You can say what you want.
The person you're talking about, Jeremy McKenzie, is an excellent public speaker. I watch him once in a while myself. I'm entertained by what he says.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me wonder why they don't talk about me. I don't know. Did Jeremy McKenzie mention me at all?
No, I think that a lot of people just associate Canadian with another Canadian. You know, so like it comes up a lot in the chat. And I certainly don't want to imply that there was any connection, but I just didn't know if you heard about the news while you were inside, because there was a trucker convoy. There was actually some pretty big stuff that went down while you were in jail, and I didn't know. Did you get wind of any of that as it was happening?
Yeah, I was at the trucker convoy for 2 of the 4 weeks, for a day. Like for the first weekend and the third weekend, I believe I was there. I visited Ottawa and saw it firsthand. Even on the way down, I suggested that, you know, the regular people are attending this, like good people, but the organizers, I think I'm a little bit suspicious. They have, some of them have connections to like Alberta separatist groups and things like this. Even Maxime Bernier, the new darling in politics, not quite, but he's built this party up. Basically, he used to be with the Conservative Party, and there's this entity called Canada Incorporated, that, you know, help them start his party up. It's like, I believe it's a globalist organization. I've got an envelope full of information I could probably read and be more knowledgeable on it exactly. But I remember before I went to jail, I remember seeing these things too, and I was deeply suspicious of Mr. Bernier with his track record with the Conservative Party. So their tentacles stretch pretty far, you know, these people, the globalists.
Yes, sir.
I'm not exactly sure. Like, I don't want to say things about people like the Diagonal guys, but you know, I have a funny feeling something isn't just quite right there. You know, they sure did get a lot of notice, and when I was in jail, they didn't even mention me at all, I don't think, right? So why wouldn't they if we're supposed to be on the same team? I even made a video about those guys, and I complained about their connections with Mr. Bernier. And, you know, and for a brief time, they might have mentioned Pierre Poilievre, who he really doesn't like. He calls him Little Pee-Pee, right? So it's kind of funny. So I'm not exactly sure what's with those guys, but I'm a bit suspicious. But you know what? I need help, and I'd like to be wrong. And, you know, I'm hoping that maybe some of these people who I don't trust turn out to be trustworthy. I don't know. You know what I mean? I just don't want to.
Oh, I can understand.
I don't want myself. And then that's about all I can vote. The only person I can vouch for really is me.
Right.
And, you know, that's it, right? And like I said, I don't like to speak poorly of others. I don't want to create divisions where there shouldn't be any.
Right.
But I'm a bit suspicious regarding these guys a little bit. I mean, they are former veterans, but, you know, you might get the off Freemason that's a former veteran too, right? So where are their loyalties? So it's, it just kind of makes you wonder, you know what I mean? But he's the real thing.
It's smart, right?
I hope he is, and all the best to him if he's a good man.
It's smart to be careful, and you know, I don't think you have to worry too much. I don't think you got to tiptoe. All of us, like everybody, probably yourself as well, everybody that I know, we've all been called every name in the book. We've been called it by some of the people that were closest to us at one time or another. I think we all kind of get, I mean, you kind of have to develop a pretty thick skin, so for someone to politely say that they may not be convinced of one thing or another, I don't really think that that's very offensive. I mean, I've literally been called every name in the book by some people that used to be my best friends. It doesn't really bother me. It's just I kind of wish that people were more maybe open about things, or I wish we didn't live in a society where nobody could trust each other. You know what I mean? Because I kind of start out trusting people until I don't anymore. But I can certainly see how it's a wise move to kind of start off on the other foot and let trust be earned and gained over time. So, you know, I hope I didn't put you on the spot there, but I don't think you're going to hurt Jeremy's feelings at all. We had a really good time, and he seems like a fairly reasonable guy anyway. He doesn't seem like one of these crazy people that, you know, can't take a joke or can't take someone calling him names or anything. You know, he's been called about everything by some of the, you know, some of the biggest people. That was the kind of the meaning. That was the reason for the question, though, is because we noticed the same thing, that the way they treated your case, the way they treated their case, completely different. But they still tried to ruin everybody's lives. It does, you know, certainly appears. A lot of these guys are still kind of dealing with, like, notoriety, I guess you could say. It brings all kind of attention, right? Good and bad. But
He's been to jail too. He's in jail for some kind of gun charge or something like that, where I think he got off on that. I don't think he did anything wrong. He just
he took a picture. I saw that picture.
There was some thing with him appearing with some kind of gun or something. I don't know what it was. And then there's that thing where he said he was gonna, I don't know if he was loaded or what, but he's talking about rape and peer body his wife. I go, holy smokes,
he's
got it pretty bad. Well, he's like that. Wow. Really, like that's like that's up there. I mean,
boys get a little bit crazy sometimes.
He explained that, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, wow. But I'm not even like doing it to badmouth him. I'm just just going over a couple of the highlights, right?
Sure.
You know, that's what it is. I mean, I don't like Pierre Poilievre either, and I see him as being an arch villain in Canada, one of the worst villains and bad politicians that I've ever even heard of. In my opinion, right? So So I mean, I don't go around saying things like that. But basically, he did, basically, he says he didn't mean it. He was just fooling around, whatever it is. I mean, it's an interesting thing.
Oh yeah.
But he's not a politician. He can speak a bit more freely, perhaps. He's not worried about votes. And generally, I speak in a way where I just I speak and say what needs to be said, and I'll let the votes end up where they will be. You know what I mean?
But, it's a pragmatic approach.
It's an interesting thing. He's an interesting guy. I'd actually like to speak with him sometime. Not to vet him or anything like that, just to maybe get a better feeling from him over time if I get to know him. But I don't know, though. You know what I mean?
Right.
I am wary, and I go into it with that. And I'll tell him, too. Basically, I'm telling him now if he's listening.
Well, I think if he were here, he'd tell you the same thing. Yeah, if he were here, he would tell you to be careful and make sure you trust people. And he seemed like a pretty pragmatic fellow. I've heard this from a lot of people. I've literally heard, like, almost everyone under the sun accused of being some sort of agent or some sort of, some sort of plant. And they wouldn't be doing that if it hadn't been that was the case in some points, several times in the past. So it is being careful. And like you said, when you're a public figure or you're going to run for office and things like that, I suppose you got to make some of those considerations. It is a little bit easier for us casuals out there to get away with, kind of running our mouths and making fun of people and, just doing kind of the meme thing. It's kind of the culture that we're in now, right? But I don't think there's anything wrong with if you're suspicious, then you either have a reason or you have a policy that leads you in that direction. And I hope that they do. Maybe they will get in touch with you. Maybe they'll maybe you could be on his. Maybe one day you'll be on his show. That'll be interesting. But somebody asked if you'd heard of him and what you thought of him, and I think we got a pretty good idea. I think we answered the question anyway.
Yeah,
hopefully.
Yeah, he does a great show. Great show.
Very entertaining.
Yeah. Better than mine.
Are you okay? That's a great segue, kind of. I know that it's getting kind of late. We're getting pretty close to an hour and 40 minutes here, and I don't want to monopolize your night, but what do you kind of see in the future as far as that kind of goes?
As far as what?
What do you see in the future as far as like having a show? Or I know that you're kind of not allowed to be online doing certain things. But do you have in the future plans for any sort of show or getting back into podcasting or kind of getting back into speaking the word?
Yeah, I was hoping to be on FTJ and have a show as a political leader in Canada and talk to the American people and the Canadian people and people all over the world about political issues, which, in life, everything is a political issue when you think about it.
Right.
So there's a lot of things we could discuss on that show, but I think we center the show around money and freedom and free speech and guns. Love guns. I mean, I can't have guns now, but I really enjoyed the time that I spent shooting. I enjoyed marksmanship. It was fun. I was just starting to get pretty good at it. There's always room for improvement, but it really was interesting. I laid in life like I am, and even my wife, she enjoys shooting. It was fun to watch her succeed. I mean, she could put a a hole in your thumbnail from 100 yards almost every time with a 308. I mean, she had a good shot. So that's pretty good.
Well, I hope that we're able to, at least after the show, kind of touch base a little bit. There are a couple of platforms, I think, that would be more than that would love to have you on. And I've got one of them, you know, is like, we'd love to have him over here. So we'll talk about White Pilled, FTJ. There are some options out here. And I think that there's a market for truth tellers and people that that kind of have you know, designs on taking the power back, you know, and taking it back through the mechanism with the power of the people behind them. And I think at the very least it'll be a learning experience, right? And it potentially it could be a success. And I think that that's a ray of hope that I think a lot of people have kind of given up on. You know, there are a lot of people that believe that political solutions aren't possible, but is that fatalist, or, you know, I mean, do you have to kind of have a heart for that? Do you have to have a faith in that people could kind of come together and still overcome, like, the corruption and the old boys club and the racial groups that will never let you, you know, be anywhere near power? Do you think that you can overcome that with the people behind you?
Yeah, it'd be nice to overcome that, and that was the point of my broadcast. It started to sound like there was no political solution. The only solution was an armed insurrection. And at the next broadcast, which I wasn't allowed to have because I was in jail, I would have said that no one's at my house right now. It looks like, you know, the military option is not going to work in Canada. So it looks like if you want to do anything at all you have left is the political option. That's where we're going. So, ironically, I got arrested before I could say those words to people. So anyhow, so we'll see what happens. We're going to try to appeal this if I get the funding for it. I think we may. I'll find out later this week. And then if not, I just go on with the convictions that I have and, you know, work with my convictions, like my character, right?
Sure.
I'm a man of a couple kinds of convictions, illegal convictions and
you got tons of convictions, right? Don't you? Yeah, I like that. I like that. You know, you speak of moral courage, and I talk about it too. I usually speak about it when I'm angry at the lack of it. But I think that it does take some courage. I know that you don't like to be lionized or you know. I think a lot of people shy away from even the word, but a lot of people call you a hero. I can't disagree with them. I think that even just a man who finds the moral courage to stand up and speak up for the right thing is kind of a rare thing these days. And so I'm really glad when I meet one. I try to value them very much and establish and foster relationships with them. I'd love to see you come to any of the platforms that I'm on. And I hope that I can follow up with you, not just after the show, but maybe we can, you know, do some things together in the future, especially if you're, you know, we're on the same platforms. And maybe you can get me to stop, you know, being so doggone reckless sometimes. I'm a little reckless sometimes, and maybe sometimes I think, well, you know, it's different when you're with like an army of people behind you, but when you find yourself suddenly you know, kind of like on your own, you start to kind of think about the things you're saying and the way that you're representing yourself and your people, right? Because it's ultimately, if we're not a good example of what a good man should be, why should we expect anybody else to do that?
Well, we all evolve, right? And you know, you see the need for a little bit of spiciness sometimes. You know, it might play right into your plans. Maybe this is exactly the way that you want things to go. Flood, you know, and who knows, in the future, maybe we'll pussyfoot around and get even bigger gains than we get now. You know, you never know. Sometimes the subtlety can do a lot more than the direct approach. I'm a pretty direct guy, but, you know, now I'm going to have to be a bit more subtle and get back to, you know, being the regular straight guy and no more yelling at the screen and things like that. So we'll see what happens. But, yeah, it's good that you're thinking about these kind of things. There's room for the connoisseurs and room for the new people. You know what I mean? Like, to attract new people, we have to be a certain way. And the connoisseurs are going to want to be, you know, they want their belief in us reinforced sometimes with a couple of statements here and there that shows them that we haven't forgotten what's what. You know what I mean? So, yeah, there's a time to say things. There definitely is.
Well, you know, I have to say, I think it's remarkable that after all of the things that you've been through and after all of the what I would think were very demoralizing things, that that you've come out with a smile on your face and a positive attitude and an optimistic outlook on the potential for your people to really come together and address, you know, their own interests, knowing that the people that are there now never will. And that's a big thing to get people to realize. You've taken on a pretty big job, and in any way that I can help you, I'm certainly more than happy to do. I feel like we owe you one for trying to warn us all about what they were trying to do to us at great risk. And I feel that same way about all the guys that are out there taking on risk to actually legitimately bring people around to a higher consciousness about their own people and the position that they're in these government systems. So how can people support you? Can they find you? Do you have a website? Is there any way that people can help support your party formation, or, you know, what's the next step and how can people get behind you on that?
Well, if people really want to do a lot right now, what they can do is they can just tell other people, find ways to communicate with their fellow citizens, try and find the words to bring on board those people that generally wouldn't associate with us because of the counterintelligence going on from the other side, right?
Right.
So definitely try and spread the message in a very positive way. Approach people perhaps that you wouldn't approach otherwise. And see if you can't find some common ground up with those folks. Undo the Marxism. And, that's the thing. We just have to talk more, and that's what they don't want us to do, so we should do even more of what they don't want us to do. Definitely speak more. Definitely try and do within the confines of the law if you live in a place like I do. You know what I mean? So that's what we should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know what, Flood, I tell you, Ben, yeah, it's a dangerous job, but honestly, if I read a history book and I saw a time in my nation's history where action was needed, we'll say, some kind of action to change the course of things,
mm-hmm.
and it was a very important time in our nation's history, I would definitely wish I was there,
right,
to help my people. Well, guess what? We don't have to look at a history book. We're living it right now. We need things to change. Our people are in desperate condition right now. They're almost dead. The vaccine die-offs, and I hope I'm wrong about this, but I'm afraid that they're going to start kicking into high gear in the next little while. And, this is the time, if you want to make a big change in your country, this is your opportunity to do something good. I mean, this is like Valhalla stuff. You know, I mean, this is what those warriors, the Vikings and those guys used to live for, these battles to defend your people. This is one of them for sure. This is an epic battle. The enemy's got the world almost sewn up. They've got 3/4 of the world poisoned with vaccines. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And the few of us that are awake are trying to defend the people while they sleep. I mean, what better cause is there in all of humanity than to try and save the world and all of humanity from a small percentage of really bad people who want to do us in?
Yeah.
I mean, this is the battle of all time, if you ask me. This is the thing that I don't want to miss. You know, if this is our time on this earth, and I'm on the field, I'm on the starting lineup of the team that's going to take on the bad guys who are going to try and defend all of humanity. Honestly, man, this is like, I don't even need food. Just give me the struggle. You know what I mean? This is all I need. You know what I mean? This is what I'm talking about. Not literally, but you know what I mean?
Sure,
this
sure.
Is it, you know? Yeah. I'm happy, man. I'm fighting. I'm good.
Right on, man. I dig that. You rise to the challenge and ask for more. And I think that's why you're a Chad. You're a legit Chad, man. Thanks, man, for hanging out with us. We did send some love letters to you. Tell me, was it fun having Dave Gahari say sweet things in your ear while he was reading you all those messages?
He did. It was really nice of him too. It was so heartwarming to see all the comments from people out in the world. It was fantastic, and thank you all for making the comments, and thank you for working hard to do what you're doing. You're real prolific creators of content. You guys are amazing there. So I just say, just do what you can do. You guys are doing fabulous. Good for you guys. My hat's off to every person.
What a great message. What a great guy. guys, put some hands together, or you know, make your favorite gesture for Les Borie, Canadian dissident, Canadian politician, Canadian leader, and a Canadian man, a man in every sense of the word. And you've been very kind to spend some time with us. I'm very sorry for the technical problems we had earlier, but I hope that we recovered well. And I know that you always deliver a good show. And so thank you so much for delivering one with me tonight. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
It was real nice, Fred. I always feel indebted to you after what you did while I was in jail. Thank you very much, my friend.
Oh, brother, we owe you, not the other way around. But thank you. It's a very kind gesture. Well, you take care of yourself. We're going to talk again soon before your campaign kicks off, okay?
All right, sounds good.
All right, thank you, Mr. Borie. You take care.
See you.
Goodbye. Goodbye. What a sweet guy. What a sweet guy. Guys, that's Leslie Borie, and what can I say, man? Class act. Faced an insane amount of adversity. Paid the price, right? Paid the price for telling the truth. How many people do you know that tell the truth, even when there is no immediate punishment for it? You know, they still won't, right? So I have a lot of respect for people that will, when there is things on the line, when there's a price to be paid, and to pay it and to come out with a plan to spend his time inside, dedicating himself to the job of the people and the cause. I'm pretty sold. It doesn't take much to sell me, but I think that's a patriot and a hero right there. And I appreciate having the opportunity to do a show with him. And now we're kicking him off the show. Isn't that amazing? Thanks again, Les.